presented by ExxonMobil.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. It is Friday, March 8th. There is only one thing driving the day, and that is why I have my homies and Playbook co-authors, Rachel Bade and Ryan Lizza. You got all three of us. We are all here to talk about last night's State of the Union. Ryan and Rachel, hello. The whole team's together.
Good morning.
It's a party.
It's a party. It's something. Now, you know, we watched President Biden's speech, 66 minutes. You know, we talked to his aides. We talked to his chief of staff this week. And everything they told us was that he was going to be fiery, that the expectations they knew were raised. Do you guys think that they met and that President Biden met what they set out to do? Ryan, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a couple of things. One, because so much of the conversation has been driven by doubts about Biden that sort of got out of hand with a sort of exaggerated, caricatured view of Biden as this feeble, cognitively impaired old man. And so the bar was really, really lowered, I think, in some ways for him. So it was a little bit easier for him to clear. If he had made some significant mistake last night, I think that's all we'd be talking about. And you know, the whole Biden theory of this election is it's got to be about the other guys. He's got to have a foil. You know, don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative. And so when they were writing this speech, they said, you know what? There's going to be 200 and something alternatives in that room, and we've got to call them out, and we've got to showcase them, and we've got to bait them. And he did that.
Rachel, yeah. I mean, what stood out for you? Because, you know, you cover all of D.C., but especially those people in that room. Like, how do you think that Biden engaged with them?
I mean, I agree with Ryan that the Republicans very much
Which
fell.
We never do, for the record.
Yeah, no, ever. And apologize in advance for my voice recovering from yet another cold this year. But no, I agree with Ryan on two things here. The first thing is my first impression in the first few minutes was just like the contrast here. I mean, and he did it right away. I mean, he opened up blasting Trump for basically cheering Putin invading NATO countries. I mean, every Republican in that room would privately probably agree with that. And yet none of them were clapping or standing. And then he did the same thing with January 6th. I mean, as for his age, I think if you had questions about, you know, his age going into the speech or watching the speech, you probably walked away thinking he still got it. There were a lot of moments, we should be, you know, clear here. There were a lot of moments where he stumbled over his words. But overall, when you watched the whole address, the moments that really stood out were not those. They were the folksy quips he had, the genuine moments, the times when he joked about his age or said things like, if I'm smart, I'd go home before even starting the speech. The drama, I thought the drama was impressive where he talked about, you know, Trump was trying to upend Obamacare's protections for pre-existing conditions. And then he leaned in, he goes, I'm not going to let that happen.
Just to follow up on one more thing you said, Rachel, about the first part of the speech, which he came in really hot and just ripped the bark off of Trump and Republicans on some pretty, you know, big issues like Ukraine and January 6th.
IVF, abortion.
Right. So just all the core issues that are going to be dominant in 2024 that they want to talk about. I don't think I'd ever heard a State of the Union in a re-election year that talked about the president's opponent this much.
Yeah.
You know, partly that's because sometimes early, you know, it's in January or February and you don't know who the opponent's going to be. The primaries might still be going on. But this was much more like a convention speech. And I think it augurs a campaign year that is going to be very, they are not going to hold back,
really damn vicious. Right? Is that the,
yeah, I mean, it's just, this is going to, you know, this is what you have to assume. This is what the Biden White House and campaign is going to look like until election day.
Well, I think I agree with you. And I think the reason he likes these better is he likes the call and response. When I've traveled with President Biden and he does an event, if it's an event where the crowd is like kind of quiet and he's basically just talking to himself, he's not that, that's when he has his biggest issues. But when he goes to black churches and there's a call and the response, when he goes and does an event in front of union workers and they're kind of engaging with him back and forth, and then apparently at States of the Union when folks are engaging with him back and forth more than I think probably any president has ever had to deal with, I think that's why they think these moments are kind of bigger and better for him.
Than town halls, right? Yeah. I mean, maybe it's televised town halls with all the different networks, like getting him in a room with people, but also, I mean, I don't know, but like, they, I feel like if they want people to stop thinking of him as old Ryan, Joe Biden who can't do the job anymore, they've got to get this guy in front of a camera more.
The last question before we all go back and keep reporting. Today and throughout this month, the Biden administration is going to hit the road and kind of do their salesmanship job, right? They are going to hit Pennsylvania. They're going to be in Georgia. They are going to be in Texas, Ohio, Arizona. I'm looking at the list here that they sent Florida multiple times. They're going to be in Missouri talking about what the president talked about. And they have failed, and they know this, to really sell their accomplishments. Biden, I think, probably did the best job putting it all in one line for everyone to take out and go forward. So what do they need to do over this next month? Whether it's the surrogates, Biden himself, what do they need to do to make sure they create this momentum and lean into, you know, Joe Biden's not a dithering old man. Look at what he did at the State of the Union.
Eugene, I think you should answer that. I'm curious. You cover this guy on a daily basis in the administration. I mean, what do you think they need to do?
I mean, I think they need to be more simple. I think part of the problem with this administration and obviously, you know, into the campaign is trying to be everything to everybody. So when you're talking to voters, you're trying to tell every single thing that you have done. You want this laundry list. President Biden himself has been very frustrated. He's not gotten credit for what he sees as his accomplishments. And so you have to tell the American people what you do for them, but do it in a way that works for them. If you're talking to someone in Texas, talk to them like they're someone from Texas. If you're talking to somebody in South Carolina where my family is from, talk to them like someone in South Carolina. I'm not saying you need to pander to people, but make it clear. Put it in language they understand. This is something that even senior aides at the White House will say they haven't done a good job at. They have a kind of reset moment to be able to do that. The campaign is kicking off kind of this month of things that they're going to be doing, kind of thinking of this as the restart to the campaign, even though they've had a lot of restarts to this campaign.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with that. I think it's done. They've lost that argument. They've been trying for 2 years to do it, and they have not accomplished it. If you close your eyes and think about that speech, try and remember one line about Biden accomplishments that was memorable. And you can't, because all of the interesting moments in the speech were when he was ripping the bark off of Trump, Republicans, January 6th, Ukraine, or getting into those spats and making Republicans look bad.
They have to figure out a way to do both?
I think it's like 80-20. It's going to be 80, just disqualify Republicans, remind them that they're the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene, and 20%, you know, oh, by the way, we passed some really cool shit. And, you know, here are the details. Go to our website if you want to learn more.
Rachel, I'll give you the last word here.
I feel like this is like the continuation of a debate we've had in our playbook chat for a while, which is like, you know, there's this a bunch of voters out there who are Democrats, right? They voted for Biden before. They're turned off. Does Biden need to talk more to those people about what he's done and what he wants to do? Or is it more like just Trump, 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 and those folks will sort of just fall in line? I know, Eugene, you've been saying for a while, like, you know, they're not taking this problem as seriously as they need to, and that the message of, oh, Trump is not going to be enough to bring those people home. I can see both arguments. I'm not going to play referee here because I love you.
I just think you can't convince voters. You can't convince voters that things are better, even though they say they're not. You might think voters are irrational and they're not reading the news as closely as you want, but you can't fight with voters once they've made up their mind about that stuff.
Ryan, the economy is like a perfect example of that too, right?
That's sort of what I'm talking about.
One of the things in Biden's speech, like he almost got pissed off when he was like, oh, you know, we stopped a recession from happening. Wages are going up. Inflation is cooling. But like people are not feeling that on the ground. And you're right. You can't force them to feel that. But you can say, look, Donald Trump is saying Putin should invade NATO, and that could like influence our country, and you know that.
Or talk
that
about
can
IVF.
Scare people.
I mean, that stuff is visceral.
Yeah, or talk about IVF. Yeah.
Which, by the way, just if we're talking about moments, to me, one of the most amazing moments of the night was James Langford mouthing, "It's true."
Well, that's going into that's being cut currently into a Democratic ad right this second.
Yeah, we were going to ask that question. Who needs to do what in the next 24 hours? I was going to say, yes, can't find whoever does this for the campaign. Clip, save, Langford reaction, ad, go.
We will continue this conversation in our Playbook group chat. You viewers and readers,
we never even got to talk about Katie Britt.
Let's just not.
100%. Guys, thank you. Thank you. We will continue our conversations off the podcast. But for the rest of you, for your schedule today, the Senate and the House, they are out. They get out of here when the president does a State of the Union. President Biden, First Lady Jill Biden will travel to Philly for a campaign event. The music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Callan Tansel Suddeth is our podcast producer. Andy Reese is our managing producer. Mike DeBonis and Zach Stanton are our editors. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.
The world needs ways to reduce carbon emissions. We're working on solutions in our own operations, like carbon capture and clean energy from hydrogen. So who are we? Believe it or not, ExxonMobil. And our solutions could help industries like manufacturing, commercial transportation, and power generation too. Heavy industry with low emissions. Let's deliver. Learn more at ExxonMobil.com.